Welcome to Catholic Sports View on Immaculate Heart Radio. A look at the athletes and coaches who shaped the Trinity League. Exploring where athletics meets faith. Now, here is your host, Bob Gibson.
Welcome to Catholic Sports View here on Immaculate Heart Radio. My name is Bob Gibson. Later on in the show, we'll go out to Rosary High School, and we'll talk to their basketball coach, Rich Yoon, and then we'll also talk to Audrey Runley, who heads up their sports medicine department out there. Very interesting interview with her. To start off the show, we go out to the Urban Youth Academy, where we recently visited with Daryl Miller.
Daryl, we're going to touch on a lot of different aspects of your story here as we talk with you, but I want to talk about this beautiful facility here in the city of Compton, and I think it's one of the crowning achievements the Major League Baseball has done in the past several years is to put facilities like this together. There's several nationwide now, but this was the first one. When did baseball kind of talk about a need for these kind of facilities and for an Urban Youth Academy to even exist?
Well, the idea started being thrown around in early 2000. There's a lot of people talking about what was being done in the Dominican Republic in regards to building these academies and developing kids. And they thought, well, why not utilize that concept in America, in the inner city? And RBI had just started and it was going pretty well. But, you know, everyone started to realize brick and mortars were needed, you know, a facility that could stand alone and really help develop boys and girls and talk about baseball and talk about all the jobs around baseball. And so we were able to start the construction here in 2004, finish it in 2006, and we've been open for the last 10 years. We just celebrated our 10-year anniversary last month.
Most of us come up playing, you know, Little League Baseball, you know, in our communities. Is that not enough anymore? Was there more of a need in certain communities to have facilities like this? Is Little League not enough?
Well, Little League is enough, but Little League's disintegrating as we know it when we were kids. It no longer exists. And then the competitive nature of all sports has just turned it up a notch. This whole club level thing that's been introduced, you know, probably starting in basketball and then in baseball and now in, you know, soccer and, you know, all the other sports. Football's still the only one that isn't a club. There's no real club. It's just expensive to play. But I think Little League struggled because it was predicated on a sound family fabric. Mother and father volunteering, putting the leagues together. And when you saw the social fabric disintegrate in America, you see more single mothers than ever. Little Leagues have been struggling to be able to provide coaches, to be able to provide umpires. And that whole model of everyone volunteering and providing this at low or no cost or little or no cost has disintegrated. And so, you know, Little League struggling to get people to play, and travel ball became such a big thing where, you know, if you don't play travel ball, you're getting behind or take lessons and all those types of things. So that played into this whole, you know, you have to get more kids the opportunity to play. And then it became really expensive. Baseball with a bat and a glove and cleats, the ordinary kid can't afford to play, you know, if you look at the median income in the United States. So that's why it became, you know, really apparent that these academies were necessary, and they are necessary, and that's why we're continuing to build them.
Was it a case of you showing interest in this idea and wanting to jump in, or did baseball approach you and try to, you know, look to tap into your knowledge to help get this thing going?
Well, I heard about it at the farm director meeting. So I was a farm director for the Angels at the time, and they introduced the thought. And that was about in 2002, I believe. And I said, wow, I went up to Jimmy Lee Solomon, who's the idea. He had pitched it at the meetings, and Sandy Alderson. And I said, wow, if you guys ever get to the point where you need some help with this, I'd love to be a part of it. And sure enough, in 2005, the phone rang, and I answered it. And it was the timing was great because I left the Angels in 2000, at the end of 2001, and then started working for a company called Big League Dreams, which builds these sports parks, and which is the number one prevalent person or entity to help this travel ball entity, these travel ball industries start and really get heavily rooted, especially in Southern California, Arizona, all the warmer states here. So I left that to come over and do this here in Compton, and then we've been able to build other ones since.
Obviously, you know, land is at a premium. There's always, you know, trying to raise money to get things going. Nice to have, you know, I guess the deep pockets of Major League Baseball to start, but I imagine that's not where it ends. There's got to be other people, companies that come in and help out and keep this thing going as well, I would imagine.
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously, Major League Baseball steamrolled and made sure the first one was built, but the other ones are private partnerships with teams. So we go raise a lot of money, federal funds, state funds, tax breaks, you know, tax incentive in income type of breaks to be able to raise a whole lot of money to be able to put these together, because they're not cheap. You know, they're, mm-hmm. you know, 6 to 10 to 12 to $15 million, depending on what you build. And in cold weather cities with that big, huge indoor facility, you want to build a major league infield if you can. Indoor cages, classrooms, right. things that you right. see in the colder, what you need to function year-round, the price tag goes up quite substantially. So to build them in D.C., you know, that was a $12 million project at least. And then Philadelphia and then Cincinnati was another $9 or $10 million project. We're building one now in Dallas, which is way over $10 million, and same in Kansas City, right by the Negro Leagues Museum, which is going to be well over $10 million. You know, the price tag keeps going up as you get into colder weather cities. So, you know, we're looking to build them all throughout the South as well in warmer cities. We built our third one in New Orleans, you know, with the help of, you know, right after Katrina hit, and mm-hmm. we were able to reestablish a couple of facilities down there and get a really great academy going in New Orleans. So Major League Baseball operates these two, Compton and New Orleans.
Visiting with Daryl Miller, former player and executive with the Angels, and now runs the Urban Youth Academy here in Compton, and helping put these together as we're talking about nationwide that they continue to build. You build the first one here. Obviously, it's a beautiful facility. Here it is. Was it an easy sell, a tough sell to get kids to come over?
Well, I think kids were intrigued by the idea, well, I could play baseball too. And I think that, you know, baseball existed, but I think the vehicle and the vision of how I could actually use baseball to get to college and maybe play pro ball was starting to evaporate. So we had to reestablish that vision, and that this is a game that you can play and remember, you know, have everyone remember history. You know, the Negro Leagues existed. There was a white league and a black league, and so this was a big deal. And baseball is in your DNA. You just don't remember, and you don't know it. And so once you reminded people of who they are and what they can be, then you know it becomes much easier. The only issue we have now is, you know, football's taken off, and it's blown up, and basketball's taken off, and there's a lot of people that look like inner city kids in those sports. Yeah, easy stars to pick out. And in baseball, it's a little more difficult, you know, to see who's my role model, who can I model myself after. When I was a kid, it was a lot easier. Now it's a little bit more difficult, but we're making sure those role models, you know, we have them on the wall out there. Can't see it here, but, you know, all the guys that have come through here, our Major League Baseball Academy, and now are playing in the big leagues or have made it to the big leagues. And we have the guys that have been in the big leagues in the past come out. So the kids now have role models, and they see minor leaguers that look like them and from the same area they're from that are in the systems now. So now it's becoming like a real dream, and guys that they really liked and they were, you know, competing against or with at the academy or in these leagues now are in college. So now guys are starting to go, wow, this is a viable dream. Right. It can happen.
The narrative is that, you know, black kids are not playing baseball as much anymore. The numbers certainly prove that out across Major League Baseball. How important is it, as you mentioned, to present baseball as an opportunity to kids within an inner city who may not have, at times, maybe other avenues to be able to go to college, you know, to be able to come here and participate like this?
Well, it's really important because, you know, baseball is not that I have to be a superior athlete mm-hmm. sport. I mean, basketball, you look at these guys that are playing in the NBA level, and even the collegiate level, these are freakish, you know, individual athletes. And football, they're phenomenal athletes. And not that baseball, you don't need athleticism. But you look at a baseball team and you have, you know, heavy guys and fat guys and tall, skinny guys and little, tiny guys. You can be any size or shape and play the game.
Right.
And it's not really predicated on athleticism. Sure, athleticism is predicated on, you know, skill development. So you can be athletic and develop skills. You can be a superstar. You can be a little bit not as athletic and develop skills, and you'll play for a long, long time. So the whole idea is, I call it the individual determination sport. If you work hard enough, if you put enough time in, you're going to play baseball at a higher level. It's just luck, a little circumstances, not getting injured, and, you know, getting at the right team at the right time. It now, you know, you can level the playing field just through hard work. And I think that's American. That, like, speaks about, you know, what we believe the American dream is. If you work hard enough, you put your mind to it, and you want it bad enough, you can achieve whatever you want to achieve. And that's what baseball, I think, sells. Hard work, determination, and if you do what it takes, you're going to get to where you want to go.
You mentioned kids looking for role models. We see a player like Andrew McCutchen with the Pittsburgh Pirates, who has stepped forward, very visual. People talk about baseball, they need to market its stars better. Is somebody like that stepping forward? Are we seeing more guys willing to step forward that kids can look to and say, hey, that's somebody, you know, I want to look up to and be like someday?
Oh, absolutely. The Torrey Hunters and all those guys that have been very vocal and were very outspoken and very visible, you know, and making sure that people know, like you mentioned McCutchen, all the guys, Chris Archer with RBI, all those guys are really in the mix because they really want to make sure the kids know that there's a vehicle and that they would like to be part of their. Curtis Granderson stepped up huge in building his own academy in Chicago at UIC. So you're seeing some guys and put his own money into, and these guys are all doing it all across the United States quietly. And then former players are all having their influence as well. And I mimic it. I say this really reminds me of what happened in the Negro Leagues. After the Negro Leagues dissolved in, you know, the late 50s, early 60s, a lot of the guys were no longer playing, but then those are the coaches that then coached the crop that I represent. Right. You know, the kids that came in the 60s and 70s, we were all coached by guys that played the game at a high, high level. And that's what you're seeing now, the guys that, like my age guys in the 60s and 70s, those guys are now in the trenches doing the same thing. It's just harder because it's more expensive. It's harder to, like you already said, it's harder to find land. It's harder to find those agreements. And you're doing it on a small scale, but everyone's making a difference. And that's the great thing is I see a lot of guys I played against, guys I knew played with, guys that I knew they were in other leagues I never played against, that they're out doing their own thing in their own way, in their own city, and they're influencing people in a positive way. That's the cool thing.
Yeah. Talking with Daryl Miller of the famous Miller family, and we'll talk a little bit more about your brother and your sister and having three professional athletes out of one family in our second segment. We'll break here on Catholic Sports View, and when we come back, we'll visit further with Daryl Miller, and we'll talk about his journey and his Catholic faith, among many other topics. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Catholic Sports View here on Immaculate Heart Radio. I am Bob Gibson, and we're getting a chance to visit with Daryl Miller out here at the Urban Youth Academy in the city of Compton. It was the very first one built, and there's many been built since, and we talked about that in our first segment. But as we go on here, I kind of want to talk about your journey and your family a little bit as well. And, you know, you're a practicing Catholic. Talk about your journey, because you didn't start out a Catholic. You're a convert to the faith. Talk about your journey and how you got to that point in your life.
Well, I grew up Baptist and, you know, converted was baptized early and gave my life to Christ when I was 16 and was active in the youth program and sang in the choir and the youth choir and traveled and all that kind of stuff with my older brother, Saul, who's in the Airmen of Note for 28 years. And so we were active in the church. And then went to Cal Poly Pomona, and that's where I ended up playing baseball. I thought I was a really good football player and got recruited to a couple places, went Arizona State and SC and a couple other places, but ended up playing baseball and played for a really good holy man named John Salinas. And it really impacted me. And I thought, you know, he never cursed, never drank, never smoked, and we couldn't do any of that at Cal Poly. And he influenced a lot of people in such a positive way. He was that kind of guy. And he's Catholic. And so that led me to at least being a little bit more open, because being from that the other side, you're looking at Catholics in a whole different way than I look at Catholics now, obviously, because I became one. And then I met my wife, who was Catholic, and tried to bring her away from the church and get her to convert to the born-again movement. And she wouldn't leave. And then Father Al Baca invited us to start a Bible study at our church here in Orange County. And then we started a young adult group and a Bible study. And then the next thing you know, 3 years later, I started really looking at the Catholic faith in a whole different way. I saw so many holy people, so many people that really loved Christ, that spoke the way I spoke, you know, praise the Lord. They really loved Christ. And then what really kind of cemented it for me was the Eucharist. When I looked at the truth of the Eucharist and I started getting these Scott Hahn tapes, because I really wanted to find out what the Eucharist meant, it seemed like I really wanted to receive Christ. And it reminded me of the day that I went forward, you know, to receive Christ. In the Protestant faith, that's what you do. You go forward in front of everyone and you receive Christ. And I went forward like 3 or 4 weeks in a row. And it reminded me, I just wanted God to know that I really meant it. And that, for me, mimics. And it really, in my opinion, is the Eucharist. Like, we're going and we're rededicating our life, if you will. Mm-hmm. We're receiving Christ as our Lord and Savior. every single Sunday. And for Catholics to understand that, for me to understand that, us to not be flippantly understanding that we're basically going, yes, I accept you into my heart as my Lord and Savior. And that's what we do when we receive the Eucharist, when we eat the bread and we drink the blood, that we're reconsecrating ourselves to that conversion moment. And that's why I became Catholic. And then the rest of it fell into place with Mary and the Pope and why we need that magisterium. And we have to understand, you know, the focus of the church of, you know, the truth is not debatable. Truth is truth. It's not like, it doesn't change. And that's the piece that I think reminds me a lot of baseball. The rules don't change. You know, we don't widen home plate so people can throw strikes. And, you know, we don't change the rules on sanctity of life because people decide that they don't think it's not really life. Our rules don't change. And that's what's important to me as I've progressed in my faith is that this is a great church. And I'm just blessed that I had the courage to really become Catholic.
Seems like baseball is the one sport where it's okay to show your religious side or if you have a belief. And we don't see that so much in maybe some other sports or it's kind of shunned. You know, Tim Tebow was kind of put down for expressing his beliefs. But it seems like baseball is really kind of the one sport where you're allowed to have religious beliefs. And there are a lot of Catholics within the sport of baseball.
Oh, absolutely. We started a group called Catholic Athletes for Christ. And baseball's, there's a lot of guys. But there's a lot of guys in football, too. And I think, but the reason there's so many, you know, people that profess their faith in baseball especially is because it's a hard sport. It's failure ridden. It's like life. And you know what? Baseball, you need an anchor. You know, when things are going bad, you know, if you have no anchor, you're in trouble. And in life, when things are going rough, you need an anchor. And that's why baseball really mimics everyday living.
We all know an 0 for 25 slump in life.
Yeah, we all know that slump. And we can get in these slumps in life. You know, like I told you, we've had a bunch of things happen in our family. Our kids got an accident. This happened, that happened. And you're like going, wow, man, it's raining pretty hard. So we all have those slumps. And without an anchor, man, you're in trouble. And that's why I think it's really important to have that anchor, if you will.
Yeah. So obviously you come from the famous Miller family out in the Riverside area. Your brother's Reggie, your sister is Cheryl, for those who don't know. How do three professional athletes come out of the same family? What was in the water out there? What did your parents do right? They were able to raise, you know, such a great family.
You know, I think it was just my dad really wanted us to use sports. My mom and dad, they said, you know, use sports to get your education because we can't afford to send you to college. And so we just tried to be good enough at something to get to college because we knew that was there was no other option. You know, you had to go to college if you're in our family. And so I think that's how the rest of it was a little bit of this hard work and individual determination thing. Cheryl was a gifted athlete. Cheryl's like 6 years younger than me. Reggie's 7 years younger. I have a younger sister named Tammy that went to Cal State Fullerton on a volleyball scholarship. And my older brother named Saul went to JC, learned the saxophone, played saxophone at a high level, and he was in the Airman of Note in the Air Force for 20, like his last 20 years. So he's an accomplished saxophone player. So we all were pretty accomplished, at least at collegiate level, and used like whatever our talents were to get to school and get our scholarship and then move on with it. So I think that was it. And then the rest of it really is just, you know, Cheryl was a phenomenal athlete. Reggie was motivated because he was Cheryl's little brother. I was just trying to find a sport that I could get a scholarship in. And then I got lucky enough to get to baseball and become a catcher. And that changed my life. Being a catcher, because you can see my eyes aren't all that good, you know. They moved to the outfield. I couldn't see, you know. So it ended up being a better place for me and a safer place, if you will.
You mentioned, obviously, you know, we talk about, you know, Cheryl played at the highest levels and wins, but there was no WNBA then, but she certainly would have been a star. We know Reggie's talent, one of the greatest shooters in NBA history. And certainly, you know what it takes to get to the major league level in the sport of baseball. Are you able to take those stories, certainly you personally and within your family, and relay those to kids out here and tell them, you know, what it takes to get on that journey?
Well, I love actually talking about that because, you know, I say, you know, my little brother and sister played, you know, this sport called basketball, and everyone, ooh, anyone can play basketball. I kind of make fun of it. And I go, but I really let them know that Cheryl was a really accomplished softball player, and Reggie was a really good baseball player as well. And they had great hand-eye coordination that helped those skills play towards the other sports. So you can always take what they're doing athletically as a football or a basketball player and relate it to baseball and vice versa. So these skills are really interrelatable. And I think it's really important kids need to know that they can play more than one sport. And that's the big thing. And let's go back to where we started. You know, everyone's feeling like you have to be play that one sport when you're 10 years old, and if you don't, you're behind the eight ball. Well, the studies are telling us, UCLA released a study last summer that said the best collegiate athletes are the ones that are playing multiple sports until they're 15.2 years old. That means you're a sophomore. So if we're playing multiple sports through our sophomore year, it's really not a bad thing. It's a good thing. So the coaches need to hear this, and the parents need to hear this, because you know, multiple sport athletes make the best athletes in the collegiate level. If that's the truth and you want to play in college, then continue playing multiple sports. That should be encouraged, not discouraged. And people are discouraging you and your kids from playing multiple sports. You need to move out of that program and go to one that's going to encourage you to play multiple sports.
We know the sport of baseball is great, but the industry of baseball, or the sport of basketball versus the industry of basketball, has the industry and the money that can be made within that, has that hurt? You know, the kid, as we mentioned, that's trying to specialize now and not just having fun and playing and trying to get where they need to get.
Well, the industry is the youth industry, you know, the baseball youth and the basketball and the soccer youth industry, where people have decided that that's how they're going to make a living. See, those people didn't exist 25 years ago. We didn't have these coaches that are charging $80 an hour for pitching lessons or for soccer goalie lessons or for football lessons and speed training and all these other things. So we've seen a lot of specialty people pop up everywhere making a living off and predicated to make a living off that youth environment. And that's dysfunctional. I think the sports at the top, they're trying to figure out how do we manage that. And I think that's the real issue that we're all finding, is how do football and basketball, baseball, soccer, how do we manage what's going on at the youth level? Because this is very dysfunctional. And unfortunately, kids are being hurt because they're only playing one sport. We know biologically and physiologically it produces tremendous amounts of strain on a body when you're doing one thing the same way over and over and over again as a young person.
We've kind of seen the sport of basketball plateau a little bit, I think. I mean, in my personal opinion, you know, football certainly has its issues with all the head injuries and everything going on now. And so many people talking about, hey, I wouldn't let my son, you know, play football now. The popular narrative for a while was that the numbers are down in baseball. Nobody's interested in baseball. It's too slow. Are we seeing a resurgence in baseball? Are we going to see the kids start to come back maybe to baseball as a safer alternative in sport?
Well, last year we had more African Americans picked in the first round than we have in 20 years. So yeah, I think you're seeing that more kids are starting to play baseball. So they didn't become first round picks yesterday. Mm-hmm. They've been in the trenches now for, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, and you'll see more this coming year. So yeah, I think guys are starting to go, wow, this baseball thing isn't that bad of a gig. The issue with baseball, the only issue with baseball, in my opinion, is the number of scholarships compared to what they are in basketball and in football. You know, the number of collegiate scholarships per persons on a team, 11.7 as a max you can have at Division I level for 35 players, that's really difficult, especially if you're underserved and you don't have the money to make up that gap or the academic resources, because as we know, there's more academic money than there is scholarship money. So unless you're a 4.0 or 3.5 or somebody that can qualify academically, you're going to have a hard time in baseball. And so that's why these academies are important, because we're really preaching education and getting collegiately sound and ready and doing your SATs and ACTs and really buckling down and getting your grades, because making sure that you function and you're able to be NCAA certified. There's a distinct turnaround. Parents are starting to go, okay, this is a viable alternative. And plus, they know that they can play for a lot longer without getting hurt.
Thanks for joining us, Daryl. We really want to thank you for taking the time and wish you luck in continuing this mission with Urban Youth Academy.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate it very much. Mr. Gibson, the real one.
Welcome back to Catholic Sports View. Joining us now for a couple of moments is the head basketball coach out here at Rosary High School, and that's Rich Yoon. Coach, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me today.
Let's talk a little about your history and how you got into the game of basketball. Yeah, I always like to ask coaches, you know, what got you first interested in the sport, you know, specifically of basketball?
Well, my dad was actually a baseball player, And I was always playing baseball and, you know, through Little League and high school. And finally, one day, I just said, you know, like with all the allergies, playing outfield and everything else, I said, basketball has got to be my sports. And it's my sport because it's indoors. I love the pace of the game. And I've always had great friends. I think the biggest part for me is that my friendships with all my basketball teammates have been such a tremendous influence on me that I just not only love the game, but everything it brings with it.
What are your earliest memories of maybe thinking, hey, someday I want to make basketball, you know, really a big centerpiece of my life?
Well, playing basketball in my life, you know, I've played in almost every level of it. And I just tried to be the best I could be at it. But after I was done, I've hit my limits. I wanted to give back. And so coaching basketball anywhere was just fun for me. Teaching was probably the biggest thing. And trying to give back all the things I've learned. So it's always been a passion for me.
Talk about a little bit about the road that got you here to Rosary. Where was your coaching start, and how did that all come to fruition for you?
Well, actually, I was, you know, trying to go to grad school, and I was in transition and looking for any job, basically, you know, that I can fill throughout that time. And the road just took me here, and I started coaching JV basketball here. I had a great first year, and the following year, the varsity coach wanted to step down and offered me the position, and we did some amazing things that first year, and it started to become very fun, very exciting. The community here welcomed me so much that I spent, this is what, my 25th year here now, so yeah I spent all my young adult life and my older year, if you consider me old now, but yeah.
So 22nd year, I think, as head coach now?
Actually, it's my 25th year. Yeah, going into it. Yeah,
25th year.
Fifth year, yeah.
Well, time flies, huh?
Yes.
You know, so many highlights along the way, and we'll talk about those. But how has coaching changed over the years? Is it still, you know, ball goes in hoop and passing around the outside? Or has the game changed, and has coaching changed over those 25 years?
Coaching for me is always a different, there's always a different aspect that is thrown in every year. I always say that you play with the deck of cards that you've been dealt with. And so I have to change my philosophy. I have to change my offense, my defense to the personnel that I have. So it's an ongoing learning lesson for me. I have to go study things all the time to try to figure out how we can do the best and get the most out of my players. And so every year, I think I wouldn't be in it if I just did the same things year in and year out. So for me, the challenge is trying to get our students to be the best student athletes they can possibly be so that we can be successful in this crazy league that we're in.
You know? Yeah, this Trinity is really something, that's for sure. How much fun is it for you to match your wits against, you know, Coach Kiernan, Coach Rosignol, all the great coaches that coach here in this Trinity? I mean, there's so many great, we talk about all the great athletes, but there's so many of you great coaches as well in this league.
That's true. You know, I respect all the coaches in our league, and every day playing, you know, one of these top teams gives me more and more insight. I learn from them just as much as, you know, I put different things out on the court. So every day, they show me things that I can expect and maybe my players can expect that we haven't thought about before. Or at the same time, they give me new ideas on how they can also be successful doing things different ways. So I am so grateful that I'm in this league because every day it gives me a chance to be better, better than what I was yesterday, and provide opportunities for my team to get better.
Do you think people understand how tough it is to compete in the Trinity? I mean, do girls come in knowing how tough it's going to be and the level of competition that this presents?
I don't think they recognize that. Some kids expect it and other kids don't realize it, but we get a mesh of both. It's not like kids who come here just want to play basketball. Mm-hmm. You know, we have everything. Our whole school is based on a mission, and it's not just basketball athletics. It's about the whole person, and we try to develop that whole person. So we really don't know if you're prepared, but you get a quick wake-up call when you get in the, on the floor for the first time, or even just see it on tape for the first time. Yeah. The physicality that they put on the court, everyone's in great physical shape, you know, the work ethic that everybody puts in. There is no bad team in our league. You know, everyone plays hard, everyone is competitive, everyone has great coaching. So I think it really prepares you for our in a playoff run that we take. We all do really well, I think, in our respective divisions.
You see the D1 players that come through the Trinity, even here in the city of Fullerton, Troy High School, one of the public high schools here, has always had a great girls program. So, you know, this really is a hotbed of girls basketball here in this community. Does that help make your players better when they get to play that kind of competition?
Absolutely. I mean, the girls know each other from all around this area, Brea, Troy, and all the other schools. And Modern Day is not that far as well. We all fight for the same, you know, girls, but these athletes, they are starting to go to schools that are known for basketball, and we just want to be competitive. We want to be right there along with the Breas and the Troys and Modern Day, so that we can, you know, say that we are relevant, you know, in everything that we do here, not just basketball.
Right. Rich Yoon joining us here, the head basketball coach at Rosary High School, 25 years in.
Rosary Academy.
Rosary Academy. You're absolutely right. You got to get that right. You kind of led me into my next question just a moment ago in that, you know, kids who come here are getting a unique education. It's a Catholic education here. How important is that in your daily routine, you know, with your girls, you know, the kind of the religious aspect of this schooling?
Well, our being is based on our religious component. We truly believe that it's part of everything. It manifests itself into everything that we do. So I think, you know, that part for me is the reason why I'm here. It's what drives me. It's my faith that helps me through the tough times. We do the same things. We pray before games. It gives us some kind of unity in what we all believe in and what we're striving to do. Because at the end of the day, are we really playing for a trophy? I mean, we're playing for growth in ourselves and our lives and what we believe in. So we really believe in trying to get the whole person out of this. Not just a basketball player, but for someone who finishes at Rosary to have choices, whether you want to go academically somewhere, whether you want to play basketball. We want to give you those choices, and we want you to be prepared for those.
You may not be playing for the trophy in the beginning, but some of those trophies have come along the way.
You're right.
Obviously, 1999 was the crowning year, the CIF championship. When you think back on a team like that, you know, what are the memories that kind of come flooding back to you?
Well, it's always nice to win. I mean, winning solves a lot of things. But those years, I know that we've had some really good years. But like every other school, you know, we have our ups and downs. But those memories that you have, you can't take those away. And the team, the leadership, the building of trust and the camaraderie. I mean, those kids stay in touch with me even to today. You know, they ask me to come to their weddings. And so relationships is what it's really all about at the end of the day. So I'm really am grateful that I get a chance to participate in some of their lives, even now.
You mentioned in making a difference in the lives of kids. I mean, really, is that's what it's about. Every coach I talk to, I mean, that's really what drives them mostly is being able to, you know, spend time with a kid for 4 years and then know that you sent them out in the world a little better than how you got them into the program here, right?
Absolutely. I mean, that's why you're a teacher and a coach, and those are the things that you signed up for. The ministry that we're in is all about trying to help them be the best that they can be. So, yes, I truly believe that all kids here will get that chance. And that's why I love the school. That's why I've been here for so long.
You've gotten a chance to coach some all-star teams along the way, Coach of the Year honors, obviously, you know, league championships, although Modern Day seems to be gobbling those up with regularity in the last few years. But how much do those kind of individual things mean to you, you know, when those kind of honors do come along?
It's always nice, you know, when someone recognizes you for your hard work. But regardless of whether I got those, I'd still be coaching. You know, I still love doing what I do every day. I get an opportunity to work with kids and be an influence in their lives. And that's all it really comes down to at the end of the day. Because if you're trying to win basketball games all the time, if you're trying to, I mean, you're going to be hopping from school to school. And that's not what I was signed up for. I really believe in the holistic approach to everything.
Are we still seeing the same caliber of basketball player come through Orange County that we saw even 10, 15, 20 years ago?
I don't know if the same caliber. There are definitely some differences. today's players are just as athletic, if not more, but I think they're more skill-minded. They all have coach. They play for clubs. They have other personal coaches. And so, the opportunities for our league to get improved are so good right now because the caliber of player is so high. I get both. I get a mix of both. I get the club player and the novice player with great athletic ability, and I have to work them to getting to that place. But we get a mix.
I sense that the popularity of girls' basketball was rising several years back. Do you still find that people are still interested in the girls' side of the game, the women's side?
Volleyball has taken a lot of of our kids, I think. You know, you don't see a lot of the six-foot players anymore. They all play volleyball, I think. But slowly, I think it's coming back. The hard play, the physical contact, I think that might have something to do with it. But kids are starting to recognize that basketball is a lot of fun. And if you work hard and do everything you're supposed to do, it pays off at the end.
Speaking of fun, your season is right upon you here as we begin the winter season. You're looking forward to getting the girls out on the court?
I'm absolutely excited. This group of kids that we have this year are all returners, basically. I have one new freshman who's unbelievable. She's going to be in the starting lineup. But we pretty much returned last year's group. And, you know, having one of the fastest 6'2" track stars, you know, in Orange County helps our situation a ton. So,
well, we wish you luck, Coach. We thank you for joining us here on Catholic Sports View. And we'll be keeping our eye on the team throughout the whole season.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
That's Coach Rich Yoon out here at Rosary High School, longtime basketball coach here with the Royals. Stay tuned. We'll have more on Catholic Sports View here on Immaculate Heart Radio when we come back. Welcome back to Catholic Sports View here on Immaculate Heart Radio. And joining me right now is Audrey Runley, and she is the athletic trainer out here at Rosary High School. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, it's great to be with you today talking about what we have here and offer for all of our students and athletes at Rosary Academy.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about your background, and then we'll kind of get into a little bit about the program here at Rosary. It's a very unique thing, but what got you interested in athletic training and I guess sports medicine in general?
Well, I was an athlete myself, so that's usually how a lot of us fall into wanting to help athletes in the future. I was a competitive gymnast and also played soccer and ran track at my high school, which was Cornelia Connolly. So I am from the tri-school as well, but my dad and grandpa were in the same field, so I got interested at a young age and then didn't know if I wanted to do physical therapy, but ended up through college settling with athletic training because I like to be involved in the sports the most instead of always being in a clinic. So that's what I like the most about athletic training and working with athletes is that I get to see them on the field as well as in the clinic.
Does it also help you kind of stay close to, you know, sports in general and kind of that athletic competition?
Of course. Everyone always asks me if I'm an athlete, and the best answer is to say, well, kind of retired, but it does keep me feeling like I'm still a part of athletics every day, and it's a good environment to work in.
I have to imagine that it's a field that is constantly evolving, and then there's new things kind of going on within the field of sports medicine.
Yes, within athletics, every day is different, so that's always a good thing to go to work and not know what to expect. We obviously always hope that there are not going to be any injuries, but within the field of athletic training, things have evolved a great amount even since I was in college. So it's a growing field, and a lot of education and knowledge gets passed around. So it's definitely a healthcare profession that is revolving and becoming more prevalent, which is wonderful, and is really just a great source for a lot of athletes, especially that it's being offered more and more for high schoolers.
So many sports are so different. Obviously, here at Rosary and all-girls school, you're not dealing with football players, so like a lot of other athletic trainers might be. I know that's probably one of the more demanding sports. But yet, there are still a lot of sports that have different motions to them, different aspects to them, that I imagine you see pretty much a full spectrum of pulled muscles and ligaments and everything else that kind of goes into being an athlete.
Yeah, Rosary, we don't have football, but which is a blessing some most times of the year. But we still see a great amount of injuries and work with definitely different types of athletes. We also treat a lot of the students here. So if there are people that don't participate in a Rosary sport, we see some random stuff on the outside as well. But we treat every sport here. So obviously, for example, instead of football in the fall, our biggest sport is volleyball. So we're dealing with a lot of injuries there. But we also treat up to our cheerleaders and dancers. So we definitely see a wide variety, both acute injuries and traumatic, but also deal with a lot of chronic injuries.
Is a big part of what you do prevention? Are you trying to prevent the injuries, you know, before they happen? And, you know, I imagine education is the biggest part of that with the girls.
Yes, it definitely is, because a lot of them haven't been an athlete long enough to understand that they can prevent the injuries. So a good portion of our job in the beginning of each season is communicating with the athletes as a team and communicating with the coaches to hopefully implement some sort of prevention program or find the ones that may end up being injured and try and help them prevent that down the road. We also have a strength and conditioning coach that we work very closely with, and he works to condition them preseason to help along with that prevention of injuries. Obviously, his goal is to get them strong and perform well, but he works very closely with us to prevent injuries as well.
We're visiting with Audrey Runley, athletic trainer out here at Rosary High School, in charge of so many different athletes out here with the Royals. What's the most common injury you see?
Well, unfortunately, probably the most common injury we see is what people call shin splints.
Mm.
So that is definitely something that is an educational piece and helping them realize why they may be having pain in their lower leg. But with a little bit of a program that we've created for a lot of different teams here, we help them get the right support and start strengthening their lower legs so that they aren't experiencing what they all call shin splints. Shin splints are a couple of various injuries that are termed into that umbrella term. So we have really tried hard this year especially to get everyone on board to strengthen before they get to that point in the season of being injured, to where they can't run, can't be on the court, field, whatever it may be.
Right.
Is it tough at times? I mean, obviously these are youngsters and they're in their teenage years, and things seem to bounce back a little better than they do, certainly when you get to my age. But still, do you find some kids go, the mentality is so, nothing will ever happen to me. I don't need to stretch. I don't need to do these things. Are you having to overcome some of those boundaries as well?
A little bit. Everyone's different, and every high schooler is different as far as being competitive or not quite understanding what it means to be injured. So we definitely deal with the group that doesn't know if they can go back in, and then the group that wants to go back in and probably shouldn't. So a lot of what we do with this age group, like you had said, is education. Whether it may be educating them of how to take care of themselves, or also educating them of how to be an athlete, what's sore and what's injured, is a big topic for us as well.
One of the things I find fascinating here at Rosary is that you have a sports medicine program here. You head up that program. How did that get started here, and how exciting is it for kids to be able to get the beginnings of that, you know, early on in their high school lives?
Yeah, it's really a great attribute to Rosary. It's more prevalent in the high schools now, but the way that Rosary offers it, I feel, is pretty unique. I think it was about 2 or 3 certified athletic trainers ago that worked here that she slowly started the program, and it has gotten to evolve into the course that they take before they get in the program is UC approved. So that really is motivating for them and helpful in the long run if they are interested in this field. But once they take the course, they then get to apply to our program, which gets them outside of the classroom as an extracurricular, so they get to work alongside the other athletic trainer and myself on the sidelines of Rosary Athletic sporting events. So they get to observe us and see what it's like to work as an athletic trainer, or kind of just get a basis of the knowledge of being a healthcare provider. So whether or not they want to be an athletic trainer, it's kind of a basis for them if they want to become a physical therapist, a nurse, a doctor, whatever their goal is in the long run.
Yeah, it seems like there's so many different fields under the umbrella of what you could be off of this. What's the reaction, you know, from the kids? I mean, is it eye-opening? Is it something they've really taken to?
They really have. This is one of the only medical-related things that they can do outside of the classroom at Rosary. So those girls that are, you know, have the ambitions of becoming an orthopedic surgeon or all these different crazy medical fields, they really have grasped that this is a little bit of a taste of what I might be experiencing through college or what it's like to work in the real world as one of these professionals.
Is this something you yourself would have had access to, this kind of a course in high school?
I didn't have access to it, which I look back and think, wow, this would have been really cool to give me kind of the one up before I got to college.
Right.
But when you go to college to be an athletic trainer, you go through a program that's way more intensive, but is similar in the lines that you're doing clinical hours on top of classroom hours. So it really is a great thing that they're offering for girls this young.
Do we see a greater need for sports medicine, for athletic trainers in the world? And as I talk about all the other things that fall under the umbrella, but are we seeing a greater occupational therapist? Or are we seeing a need more for these fields?
I think that healthcare professionals in general are needed anywhere you go. The wonderful thing about athletic training is that we're trying to get it more prevalent in the high school setting. So the secondary school setting is really pushing to have a certified athletic trainer at every high school, because high schoolers get injured just as much as college athletes do. So that's the main push for our profession, and it's going well. But obviously not every high school is able to have two certified athletic trainers like the Trinity League schools do. But it's definitely more prevalent and growing, and people are understanding a little bit more why we're needed.
As the head of the program, I imagine you get to set the curriculum or, you know, have great input into that curriculum. What are the things that the girls are directly learning right now?
In the course, there is curriculum that's set for the UC approval, and it really gives them a little bit of each aspect of the profession. We go over not just being an athletic trainer, so we kind of open them up to the world of medicine a little bit. And then we go over all of the body parts, anatomy, the injuries themselves, and prevention, strength and conditioning, a little bit of nutrition. We throw in environmental factors. So we're really covering the scope of what we see and know as a professional.
A couple more minutes here with Audrey Runley, athletic trainer out here at Rosary High School. What do you see as the future of this program? Would you like to see it grow into other schools or have other schools talk to you about maybe instituting something like this in their curriculum?
Yes, of course. I know that there's a couple of Trinity League schools that have a program. Our closest brother school, Servite, does have a program pretty similar to us. And there are some courses at each Trinity League school in sports medicine. I'm unsure if each of them have a clinical hour program like we do. We've kind of made it, it used to be a class, and now it's kind of an extracurricular club sort of model, which gives the girls a little bit more time and they don't have to fit it into their academic schedule. So that's helpful so that they still get to be involved. So it would be great for all the high schools in the area and within our league to kind of work together and show that everyone has the same thing to offer.
What's the biggest piece of advice you can give everybody to what you need to do to keep your body moving in the right direction and how you can keep healthy while still trying to be the weekend warrior or the part-time athlete?
Well, being active and exercising is always important and staying healthy through your life. But I think it's just taking care of your body. As much as going out and exercising is important, taking care of the body as it recovers from the exercise is what will get you further.
Audrey, thanks for joining us here on Catholic Sports View.
Thank you.
I want to thank all my guests this week, Daryl Miller, Audrey Runley, and the girls basketball coach out at Rosary High School, Rich Yoon. Thanks for joining us here on Catholic Sports View. If you want to catch the replays of this show, go to OCCatholic.com/radio, and you can catch all the podcasts right there on the website. I am Bob Gibson. I thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next week right here on Catholic Sports View.